NBC Radio Network celebrates its first Fabulous 50.
Howdy!
Hi ho, everybody.
Good evening, Mr. First Nighter.
Good evening, Mr. and Mr. North American. All the ships at sea, let's go to press.
Where?
The only thing we have to fear.
Ladies and gentlemen, easy aces.
We are resolved to destroy Hitler.
Henry Aldrich.
Mr. Chairman.
You were expecting maybe Emperor Shapiro Hito.
Everybody awake! Let the word go forth.
Ignition. Lift off.
I have a dream.
Hello, Lyndon.
How mortifying.
Float like a butterfly.
And sting like a bee.
Let me make one point clear.
NBC Radio, America's first network, presents highlights from its first 50 years. 5 one-hour shows with hosts Ben Grauer, Bob Hope, Bing Crosby, Arlene Francis, and John Chancellor. And special material by David Brinkley. Brought to you by the premium wines of Ernest and Julio Gallo. And by the makers of other fine quality products. Your host this hour, Ben Grauer.
It all really began back in 1912, the date April 14th. SS Titanic ran into iceberg, sinking fast. The dots and dashes that spelled out this news were heard by a young wireless operator at a station on top of Wanamaker's department store in New York. For the next 72 hours, without a break, he became the only link with the developing story. As President Taft ordered all other stations to shut down in order to keep this one clear line of communication open. Through this event, David Sarnoff, that was the operator's name, proved to the world the value of radio. In the years that followed, it progressed from dots and dashes to words and music. Then, on the evening of November 15th, 1926, 1,000 elegantly attired guests gathered in the grand ballroom of the old Waldorf Astoria in New York, down on 34th Street, for the first broadcast of the NBC Radio Network. They, and several million of us at home, listening to one of the 26 stations that made up the network, heard these opening words from NBC's first president, Merlin Aylesworth.
Beginning tonight, you will receive a new thrill in radio. In the future, those engaged in productions will, through the power of radio broadcasting, with modern radio equipment, offer their talents, whether in song, drama, comedy, or orchestral music.
And NBC Radio was on its way. Opera stars sang, orchestras played, comedians made us laugh. One of the very first was Will Rogers, who just loved to poke fun at everybody's favorite target.
With Congress, every time they make a joke, it's a law. And every time they make a law, it's a joke.
Sounds as timely today as it did 50 years ago, doesn't it? And when the opening festivities were over and the network moved on to regular daily broadcasting, our first great comedy stars, Amos and Andy, also found politics a source of fun.
You don't know politics like I do.
Tell me this, though. Why can't they have a Democrat and a Republican president at the same time?
The trouble with that is the Republican would get everything messed up for the Democrat and vice versa.
And what?
Vice versa.
He ain't running, is he?
You know, Amos and Andy were so popular that when 7 o'clock rolled around and they were on the air, just about everything stopped. Phone calls, conversation, even meals. Well, comedy and music were what listeners wanted. So NBC went out and got the best. In 1928, Broadway's most exciting star, Al Jolson, joined us.
What do you think has come over me? I can't stand it. I feel a song coming on. Give out. I feel a song coming on. And I'm warning you, it's a victorious, happy and glorious new.
And from the Ziegfeld Follies, where he was billed as the perfect fool, Ed Wynn came to NBC, eventually winding up as Texaco's fire chief.
The title of tonight's opera is Rosalie. Rosalie is so fast,
that when she goes to bed, she reminds you of an ocean liner. It takes a couple of tugs to get her out of a slip. I got some that are worse than that.
Also, from Broadway and the movies, the beloved little Banjo Eyes, Eddie Cantor, whose wife Ida didn't mind when he sang about other girls.
If you knew Susie like I know Susie, oh, 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 what a girl. There's none so classy as this fair lassie. Oh, 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 my goodness, what a chassis. We went.
Then there was a chap who added the word crooner to our vocabulary, Rudy Vallee, who on his own program played straight man to comedian Jack Pearl, who played the role of Baron Munchausen, teller of tall tales.
Just a second. Do you want me to believe that you swam all the way from New York to South America?
Well, I would prefer it.
Well, I'm not going to believe a thing like that.
Rudy, if you ain't going to believe a thing like that, you're going to have a lot of trouble with the stuff that comes later. You see?
And then there was the man who was not just loved by his audiences, but by his fellow comedians as well, the peerless Jack Benny.
For your information, Don, when I started on radio, I was 22.
What are you talking about? I knew you then and you had gray hair.
Don, I was born with gray hair. I was worried about the doctor bill. I'm glad I didn't pay him slapping me when my back was turned. And Don, here's an amazing coincidence. After all these years, who do you think is sitting in the audience this very moment?
The doctor.
No, his lawyer. The case comes up in court Wednesday.
What a lineup of great talent NBC had right from the start. And that went for newsmen as well. John Chancellor will tell us about that shortly.
The First Fabulous 50 will continue right after this. Now back to the First Fabulous 50 with Ben Grauer.
You know, from the earliest days, NBC Radio News brought our listeners something newspapers could never provide: immediacy, the story as it happened, and in addition, the actual voices of those involved. I'm happy to have John Chancellor with us to illustrate this. John?
Thank you, Ben. The first great example of the concept Ben has just discussed begins on the 20th of May, 1927. The Roaring Twenties, the Jazz Age. 23 Skidoo and OU Kid. Clara Bow was appearing in Rough House Rosie, Lon Chaney and Mr. Wu. The country was thriving, full of hustle and bustle. But at Yankee Stadium that evening, before the heavyweight championship fight between Jack Sharkey and Jim Maloney, 40,000 people stood in silent prayer to wish Godspeed to a young man who, that morning, had started on a flight to immortality. The world waited while monitors reported sightings, Halifax, Nova Scotia, then Belfast, Ireland, Cherbourg, France, and finally, 33 and a half hours later on NBC Radio.
This is Lowell Thomas in New York. He made it. Charles A. Lindbergh, Lucky Lindy as they call him, landed at Le Bourget Airport, Paris at 5:24 this afternoon, thus becoming the first person to fly New York to Paris nonstop.
Charles Lindbergh, the lone eagle, became the reigning hero of the world. Wild receptions in Paris, London, and when he returned to this country on the U.S. cruiser Memphis, he was greeted by cheering throngs in Washington, D.C. NBC Radio was there in the person of Graham McNamee.
And now the National Broadcasting Company and Associated Radio Stations ask you to just listen to the band for a few moments, because particularly, this is the first time band music or music has been transmitted from the Atlantic coast to the Pacific coast.
This was followed by President Coolidge's speech at the Washington Monument.
I bestow the Distinguished Flying Cross as a symbol of appreciation for what he is and what he has done upon Colonel Charles A. Lindbergh.
When Coolidge described Lindbergh, it sounded as though his speechwriter had dipped into a thesaurus.
Intelligent, industrious, energetic, dependable, purposeful, alert, quick of reaction, serious, deliberate.
One attribute the president neglected to include was Lindbergh's sense of humor, which Lindy revealed during a speech at a press club dinner later that day.
When I landed at Le Bourget, I landed with the expectancy and the hope of being able to see Europe. And I wasn't in any hurry to get back. And I was informed that while it wasn't an order to come back home, that there'd be a battleship waiting for me next week.
Lucky Lindy? Lucky indeed, although his ability and courage played a decisive role in his success. And when the young hero went on to marry the talented, charming heiress, Anne Morrow, it seemed that all the ingredients for a storybook happy ending had been assembled except one. The birth of their first child, a boy, Charles Augustus Lindbergh Jr., provided that final ingredient.
Lucky Lindy!
But the "They Lived Happily Ever After" ending was not to be. On April the 3rd, 1936, there was this bulletin on NBC Radio.
The National Broadcasting Company presents a special bulletin, Trenton, New Jersey. Bruno Richard Hauptmann was electrocuted at 8:47 tonight for the murder of the Lindbergh baby.
The death of the German-born carpenter had followed one of the most widely publicized murder trials in history. And the Lindberghs withdrew into almost total isolation from the public, except for a brief reemergence by Colonel Lindbergh several years later, urging us not to get involved in World War II. This, coupled with his earlier praise of the German Air Force, caused some people to label Lindbergh a Nazi sympathizer, a stigma which marred to the end the life of the first American hero that the public got to know on the radio.
Thank you, John. I'd like to add a brief personal note, if I may, about that kidnapping. As NBC's reporter at the Trenton State Police headquarters, waiting for word, I broadcast the Lindbergh baby's formula in the desperate hope that the kidnappers would hear it and take care of the baby. It was one of the most moving moments of all my years at the network.
More from NBC's first 50 years after this. NBC's first Fabulous 50 continues. Once again, Ben Grauer.
Earlier, we heard some of the great performers who were established stars before they came to NBC. But we also developed our own radio personalities. The Happiness Boys, for instance, Billy Jones and Ernie Hare.
She's gone, let her go. You're not fast, but not too slow. She'll never find a fella like me. Just feel great, you just laughed. I tore up her photograph. She'll never find a fella like me.
No, it's not Renfrew of the Mounted. This was the opening theme of the Clico Club Eskimos. Harry Reese, leading his musicians, clad in fur parkas. They were really wearing fur parkas. I wore a tuxedo. See, I was the announcer. In the comedy department, there were Easy Aces.
That money is in a bank to stay, and he's not...
Oh, all right. The minute you mention that money, you fly off the coop.
I'll fly off the coop when you start talking about our nest egg that we laid away for later on. There's nothing you need that money for now.
Oh, well, we could travel and meet new people. I get tired of the same couples all the time. You know how they say, familiarity breeds contempt.
Isn't that awful? Would you mind if we don't discuss this anymore? I'd like to finish my paper here.
And wherever you live, coast to coast, you didn't have to pay a personal visit to Manhattan to enjoy its music. NBC provided instant travel.
Jump on the Manhattan merry-go-round. We're touring, alluring, the New York town. Broadway or Harlem, the musical show. Be our guest as you rest at
We had music from the big city, and we had comedy about small-town families. One of the most lovable and most witty was Vic Insane. Here, Vic is playing Rummy with his teenage son, Rush.
Your sweet face is painted with a happy leer. I apprehend you think you've won the game.
I have won the game. Look here.
Hey, hey.
You fellas done with your Rummy?
Dry Rot just blundered into an accidental victory.
It's always accidental when I win.
Better hop into that algebra study and hadn't you, son?
Algebra sure is a rotten topic. Fails to hold an individual's interest.
You'll feel an individual's interest where you don't want it if that report card ain't up to snuff this time.
Oh.
Rush, get your feet down from there.
I enjoy the sensation of twisting my spine out of shape.
Get them down, I said.
Twist his spine out of shape. Kids in the 30s weren't very different from kids today, were they? But when it came to music, we had someone with us at NBC then who was unique. As a singer of light classical music, she was supreme. Jessica Dragonette, queen of radio. I can see her now, standing center stage in the old Cathedral Studio at 711 Fifth Avenue. A slight figure, golden-haired, her firm little chin tilted high, and the notes pouring out. From the Cathedral Studio, we drop in at 79 Wistful Vista, where Fibber McGee and Molly are in the kitchen.
McGee never helps me wash the dirty dishes, McGee.
Come in. You kids want to buy any Easter eggs?
No, thank you, Mr. Oldtimer. I don't believe we want any.
Oh, come on, kids. Later, kids. Sorry, I didn't want any Easter eggs.
Hey, that's the wrong door, old timer.
No, that's the closet door.
Oh, no.
Ain't you kids ever going to straighten out that gosh darn museum?
Well, we're glad they never got it straightened out because it never failed to give us a laugh. Still does. Well, we're approaching station break time in our first Fabulous 50 celebration. But rather than my saying, this is Ben Grauer, etc., etc., listen to what the late H.V. Kaltenborn, first dean of NBC Newsmen, once said about this traditional pause.
The announcer would suck in his breath and rattle off, "This is station WEAF, WJR, WTAG, WTIC, WLIT, WCSH," naming every station on the hookup. That was in 1926. A few months and several breathless announcers later, we bought the electrical chimes. They cost only $48.50 at the time, but think of all the trouble they save as we now take a short pause for station identification.
Now NBC continues celebrating its first Fabulous 50. Here's your host, Ben Grauer.
Like any healthy youngster, the NBC radio network was full of curiosity. We were willing to try just about anything. We even had Ben Burney, the old maestro, trying to do on-the-scene coverage of a scientific balloon flight. Ben was better at band leading. But when it came to sports, NBC was there, fustest with the mostest. Graham McNamee with the first coast-to-coast Rose Bowl in 1927. And then, in 1929, at the Kentucky Derby, Clem McCarthy calling the run for the Roses down the home stretch.
Look out! On the outside, here comes the California Colt, Nashifer. He's coming at Clive Van Dusen. The jockey pony Nocatee shakes his whip, and the son of mighty Man-O-War comes away. Clive Van Dusen by 3 lengths.
In 1934, heavyweight boxing champion Primo Carnera was losing to challenger Max Baer. And Graham McNamee was there.
Carnera has fallen. Carnera has fallen again. But he is up instantly. The man won't stay down. Talk about nerve. He'll fight till he's dead, that man. He'll fight till nothing can stop him. Carnera is almost through, though.
Thanks to Graham's blow-by-blow description, folks listening to NBC at home had a much better idea of what was going on in the ring than most of the paying customers out there in the far reaches of Yankee Stadium. And there was a bonus for radio listeners. Graham brought a perspiring pugilist into their homes that night to deliver what eventually became the traditional greeting to a prize fighter's best friend, his mother.
And now I'll have Max Baer over here in a minute, who has just won the heavyweight championship of the world.
Hi, Graham. Hello, kiddo.
Oh, mother, I want to say hello to you. I'm very happy. Joe Humphreys is now raising Max Baer's hand in token of winning. Hello, Mom.
Hello, Mom. From Max Baer, the victor's valedictory. Then there was the contest. I guess you couldn't call it a sporting event. The contest involving three NBC regulars, Graham McNamee, Milton Cross, and someone who shall or certainly should be nameless, a speed-talking contest. Graham and Milton had done their bit, and then the final contestant read from Alice in Wonderland.
The sun was shining on the sea, shining with all his might. He did his very best to make the billows smooth and bright, and this was odd because it was the middle of the night. The moon was shining sulkily because he thought the sun had gotten a visit to be there after the day was done. It's very rude of him, she said, to come and spoil the fun. The sea was wet as wet could be, the sands were dry as dry. You couldn't see a cloud because no cloud was in the sky, and the birds flying overhead, there were no birds to fly. The wall wasn't the carpenter who walked across it, and they went like anything facetious, but it said, and this were only cleared away, they said it would be grand. The wall wasn't the carpenter walked down a mile or so, then they rested on a rock conveniently low, and all the little oysters dead and waited in a row. The time has come, the wall was said, to talk of many things, of shoes and ships and sealing wax, of cabbages and kings, and so either the sea is boiling hot and where the pigs have wings. But wait a bit, the oyster cried, before we have a chance. And some of us are out of breath, and all of us are fat. No hurry, said the carpenter. They thanked him much for that. A loaf of bread, the walrus said, is about what chief will need. Pepper and vinegar besides a very good meal.
Very, very, very good. We had to rule Graham McNamee out because he skipped a whole page.
Yeah.
Milton Cross did 364, and Ben Grouse up around 437. So, ladies and gentlemen, the winner and champion of these premises, Ben Grouse.
Say a few words to the folks back home, Ben.
Hello, Mom.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it's plain the imprint of Max Baer was still in the tip of my tongue when that event took place. Well, we also covered events that had a heartwarming side to them. The annual return of the Swallows to Capistrano was one of them. At the mission of San Juan in California was reporter Buddy Twiss.
It seems only fitting that the first greeting to the Swallow should come from the little children to whom they bring the most joy and happiness. A traditional song that is sung each year on the day of the arrival of the Swallows. Good morning, Mr. Swallow.
Although it wasn't done for that reason, the broadcast did help save the mission, which was on the verge of closing for lack of funds, as listeners sent in contributions, voluntary contributions. In 1936, NBC News took to the air in more ways than one. We sent reporter Jack Fraser in a plane to cover the arrival of the Queen Mary on its maiden voyage.
Coming up now on the starboard side of the ship. And as we approach, we see there are some early morning risers that are taking their airing out on the boat deck as they wave as we pass by to the starboard. We dip our wings as we pass by now. We're just passing the front funnel. And there are the brown.
But radio didn't just confine itself to fun and games. When the great floods of the middle 30s swept across the Ohio and Mississippi River valleys, our NBC affiliates there didn't just report the disaster, but they took an active part in the rescue work. Among them, WLW in Cincinnati, WAVE in Louisville, and in Memphis, Tennessee, station WMC did its share.
To the residents of Ashport, Tennessee and vicinity, Potter Dredge boat is now at Ashport and will take refugees picked up at Gold Dust and inhabitants of Ashport to Ashport Bluff tomorrow. Anyone wanting to get out, come to Jap Henderson's store at Ashport tonight or as early as possible. We repeat a message that we gave.
From that
earlier,
day to this, through flood, tornado, hurricane, earthquake, whenever help has been needed, radio has been there.
More of NBC's First Fabulous 50 after this. Now back to the First Fabulous 50 and host Ben Grauer.
From our earliest days, NBC has pioneered just about all the varied features broadcast on radio and television. Back in 1929, for example.
You? Is anybody?
That's the way the Goldbergs began. And Molly and Jake and their children, Rosalie and Sammy, made the daily dramatic serial an instant success thanks to the warm, humorous nature of the show, very close to reality. Other daytime dramas which followed drifted away from this reality, became known as soap operas because of their melodramatic storylines and the nature of their sponsors' products. Among them were Road to Life, Porsche Faces Life, and these.
The story of young Dr. Malone, dedicated to those men and women whose selfless service has inspired it, our doctors.
And now, Stella Dallas, a continuation on the air of the true-to-life story of mother love and sacrifice, in which Stella Dallas saw her beloved daughter Laurel marry into wealth and society, and realizing the difference in their social worlds, went out of Laurel's life.
One Man's Family is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of the younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Tonight, we present Chapter 7, Book 43, entitled The Man Who Lay With His Face in the Leaves.
They weren't kidding. That was really the title of the episode. So it's easy to see why soap operas became a natural subject for satire. And no one ever did a better job of it than the great comedy team who were with us at NBC for years, Bob and Ray.
And now, Tanglefoot, the greatest name in flypaper, brings you another episode of One Fella's Family. Today's episode, entitled Paint Up, Clean Up, is taken from Book 22, Chapter XXIV, pages 15, 16, 17, and two sentences from the middle of page 18. It's shortly after 9 in the morning as we look in on the Butcher family. We find Father Butcher
Family, have you seed by purple paint?
And Mother Butcher standing just inside the door, and she answers,
What?
And then Father Butcher.
I said, Fedley, have you seen
Will
my
purpose? Will you be quiet, announcer, and let us do it now, please?
Yes, yes.
I'm sorry. I just trying to be helpful.
What were you saying, fool announcer? Then he said, then she says, and then he says.
It's perfectly obvious.
We know what we're saying, thank you. We were here for more rehearsals than you were.
I do add more words
to
your...
I didn't have to be here for all rehearsals, you know.
Well, you should see the end of the sentence.
I just do the commercials and I introduce the show. And I don't think that it's in the contract that I have to take any guff from either one of you two.
Well,
let us do the program and then we'll talk about it later.
Now.
What were you saying now, Father?
I've lost my place here now.
Fool announcer.
I think you said something first.
Well, you were looking for paint.
Fairly, have you seen my purple paint?
What do you want with purple paint?
He wants to paint the garage with it.
She knows what I want to do, and it's
in
her next
line. Will you be quiet?
Well,
now then.
I'm not in the mood, Fanny.
For what?
To do this confounded script.
Well, you're on the air. You can't just say you're not in the mood.
You better can it, folks. Time's run out.
Oh, am I going to burn?
Will Father Butcher ever feel like finishing the episode? Will Fanny finally bop the announcer? Wish we could say, tune in tomorrow and find out, but it's all part of the past now. However, do stay tuned for David Brinkley.
More of NBC Radio's anniversary celebration shortly. NBC's first Fabulous 50, and once again, Ben Grauer.
As I said a little while ago, daytime dramatic shows began in 1929 on NBC. That was also the year when the first great national crisis of the radio era began. We've asked David Brinkley to guide us through it. David?
Ben, 1929 started quietly enough for most citizens, but on Valentine's Day, in a garage on North Clark Street, Chicago, a somewhat noisy surprise party was held. 7 gangsters were massacred by fellow professionals costumed in police uniforms. As usual, the real police suspected Al Capone, but also as usual, they were unable to prove a case against him. Following this no doubt historic event, the year moved along, the economy was flying high, Admiral Richard Byrd flew high too, over the South Pole, and on October 24th, a new variety program became airborne on NBC Radio.
My time is your time.
Your time. Rudy Valley, self-styled vagabond lover, settled down as host for the show on which he would introduce many of the great comedians of the era. The next day, and no cause and effect relationship has ever been established, the next day, the great stock market crash began. Before it was over, the value of securities had dropped $30 billion. Some stockbrokers, ruined by the crash, followed the descent of their fortunes by leaping from the upper floors of tall buildings, furnishing material for a somewhat macabre joke by the usually lovable Eddie Cantor.
Nowadays, when a man walks into a hotel and requests a room on the 19th floor, the clerk asks him, for sleeping or jumping?
Keep your sunny side up, up. Hide the side that gets blue.
Despite this musical encouragement, as devastation spread from the stock market through the entire economy and unemployment rose to unprecedented levels, 12 million out of work at a time when our population was half what it is today, despair and anger became the reigning emotions of the day. Drastic solutions were called for. Herbert Hoover, the man who had become president in 1928 with his chicken in every pot, two cars in every garage slogan, defined the major issue as he sought re-election in 1932.
This campaign is more than a contest between two men. It is more than a contest between two parties. It is a contest between two philosophies of government.
Mr. Hoover's philosophy lost, and on March 4th, 1933, the new president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, began an explanation of his philosophy with a phrase that became as famous as some of Shakespeare's.
First of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
A day later, Roosevelt again made use of network radio for the first of his fireside chats.
I want to tell you what has been done in the last few days, why it was done, and what the next steps are going to be. The bank holiday, while resulting in many cases in great inconvenience,
The bank holiday was the first of many dramatic moves Roosevelt made. There was also the Agricultural Adjustment Act, then the Civilian Conservation Corps, and other programs. All became better known by their initials, but not necessarily better loved by FDR's enemies, not the least vocal of whom was Louisiana's flamboyant Senator Huey Long, who referred to himself as the Kingfish, after the character in Amos and Andy, who was head of the Mystic Knights of the Sea.
Now it is with the PWAs, the GWAs, the NRAs, the AAAs, JUGs, and the GINs. There is starvation, there is homelessness, there is misery on every hand and corner. But mind you, in the meantime, Mr. Roosevelt has had his way. There's one man that can't blame anything on anybody but himself, and that's Mr. Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Despite Senator Long's skillful attack, President, as he put it, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, persisted. And by the 1936 convention, a song which had had the misfortune of being written in 1929, the year of the crash, now seemed to have a measure of validity. Happy days are here again, but were they?
Die Sauge gelöst ist, so war uns Gott helfe. Sieg! Ha!
In Germany, growing out of the Depression there and feeding on a diet of nationalism and racism, the Nazi menace had emerged. But we were too busy enjoying our re-emerging prosperity to pay it much attention. For us, Ben, happy days, if not here again, seemed not too far off.
True, David, and arrive they did, if only briefly, before World War II began.
More from NBC Radio's first 50 years right after this. Here's Ben Grauer again with more of NBC's first Fabulous 50.
As we weathered those Depression years, we saw new programs added almost every month to the NBC roster. Broadcasts from the Metropolitan Opera, religious programs, a new type of show called panel shows. And we heard new superstars in the making. Let's go back to the original Amateur Hour with Major Bowes.
Good evening, friends. Once again, the wheel of chance, or fate, as you please, is about to revolve. And as the barker standing at the wheel of fortune says, around, around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows. Or does anybody know what will
that happen? Night, the wheel stopped in front of a brash, skinny kid from Hoboken. Name is Sinatra.
Who'll speak for the group?
I will. I'm Frank, Major. We're looking for jobs. How about it? Everyone that's ever heard us liked us. We think we're pretty good. And we play real swing music, too.
Real modern swing music. Ultra-modern music. What's your tune?
The Choice of an Aching Heart.
Choice of an Aching Heart.
You made me what I am today. I hope you're satisfied. You dragged me down and down until the soul within me died.
Even way back then, he did it his way. And he finally got his own show on NBC. And on October 26, 1935, Wallace Beery, gruff, tough, and lovable movie star, was host to a 12-year-old girl on another NBC variety show.
Now, what do you want to do when you grow up to be a great big girl, huh?
I want to be a singer, Mr. Beery. And I'd like to act, too.
Well, you'll do it. Don't worry. Now, go right to it, and if you need me, I'll be standing right there. You hear?
Broadway! Of a million lights, Broadway, street of a million sighs, Broadway, street of a million nights, nights of pain and tears and sorrows, nights that promise gay tomorrows. But up or down or sad or gay, there's something in this whole Broadway that makes you tingle in and out, that makes you get right up and shout, God a day, God a day. And Broadway rhythm, it's got me, everybody dance. Everybody dance. Out on the gay white way, in each merry cafe, orchestras play, taking your breath away. With the Broadway rhythm, it's got me. Everybody sing. What it is today. What that do, Fussy-Fussu, Fussy-Fussu, going to town, yeah, yeah, everybody dance.
Judy Garland, 12 years old, showing then all the skill that made her one of the greatest entertainers of our age. Well, that's a tough act to follow, but there are a couple of fellas who can manage it, both of them hosting their own shows for many years here on NBC.
First, I'd like to hear you sing.
Okay.
When the blue of the night meets the gold of the day, someone waits for me.
Well, what do you think, Mr. Hope?
Let me see your feet.
My feet? Why?
Yeah, with that voice, you'll make a wonderful grape crusher.
The prospective grape crusher was Bing Crosby, of course. And the cheerfully caustic comments came from Bob Hope. Bob will be your host for the second hour of our anniversary celebration next week. More comedy then, more music, and the real-life drama of a world at war, as well as other memorable sounds from our second decade. Well, this is where I get off. Just reviewing these fabulous years with you has really been a pleasure. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I. This is Ben Grauer.
You have been listening to the first Fabulous 50, produced by the NBC Radio Network and NBC News.